WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at FairToFlare.com. I'm Jason Mann, and with me today is Graham Cawthon from the history of WWE.com. Graham, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing great. Doing great. Glad to have you on the show. And why don't you tell everybody a little bit about the history of WWE.com?
Okay, the history of WWE.com is a living, breathing encyclopedia of pro wrestling, probably dating back to 1963 or so, and it's about to be entering its 10-year anniversary. It's basically every show that the WWE has ever held, back to when it was the WWWF, and in recent years I've expanded to not only WCW and ECW, but also Jim Crockett Promotions back to 1983. So it's much more than match results. You got reviews, you got columns, you got podcasts. So there's a lot for just about everyone on there.
Yeah, and I mean it's just such a great resource to use. I mean I check results on it all the time. Just for somebody who's interested in the past and in just kind of how things developed, it's definitely an invaluable resource. How do you get all the results? I mean, do people send them in? Do you just find them online? Like I'm sure there's many different sources, but how do you kind of compile them?
All of the above. I think primarily it's me keeping an eye out through the newsletters and through the magazines and just by watching the shows every week. But it would not be nearly as complete as it is without a whole bunch of reader feedback and reader support. And I get emails all the time saying, hey, on the website it says you only know what guys were at the show, but you don't know any of the matches. Well, I was 10 years old. It was the first show I ever went to, and I remember everything. And here's all the matches. Here's who won. Here's the finishes. And it's just been a huge source of support from the fans that go to the website and help me make that as accurate and as complete as I can.
Mm-hmm. So what gave you the idea to start the site?
Boredom. It was a little bit of boredom, but when it was probably about, well, it was 10 years ago, and I was looking online because I thought, when I was a kid, I would get the After Mags, the Pro Wrestling Illustrated. Mm-hmm. And my favorite section was always the ring results, because when I got into wrestling, you did not see top matches on TV every week like you do now. So I open up the After Mag, and it says, for instance, Shawn Michaels beat Mr. Perfect in, Dayton, Ohio. Holy crap, that's coming up at SummerSlam. I can't believe they already had that match. And so I would pay close attention to that. And so about 10 years ago, I was looking online. I was like, there's got to be a resource out there that has compiled all that stuff. And there really wasn't, and that shocked me. And so I just kind of, pieces by pieces, I started putting this together. And it really only took a few weeks or a few months before a lot of people saw it and saw that I was devoted to it and passionate about it. And they, wanted to help me out as much as they possibly could, and that's really how the foundation got formed.
Mm-hmm. So when did you first get interested in wrestling?
I was, 1992, mm-hmm. And I say that, and a lot of people that have been to the website a lot, they go, there's no way he just started watching at that point, because these ring results go back so far. Mm-hmm. But it was really only about 92, and I was 10, 11 years old. And for the longest time, there was nothing about wrestling that interested me. I had neighbors that were into it. I had family that was into it. But I just kind of saw it as the stereotypical overgrown guys growling and barking at each other, and that didn't do anything for me. But by the time I got into it, this was after WrestleMania 8, so Hogan wasn't there anymore. Andre obviously wasn't there anymore. And once I allowed myself to watch an episode or two, I got really interested. I mean, I was into comic books at the time, and I think there's a great parallel between the two. And I was watching guys like Bret Hart, like the British Bulldog, and there was no barking, there was no yelling. And compared to what you had seen in the WWF, a lot of these guys were smaller, like Shawn Michaels. And it was not what I think the average person would have thought wrestling was at that point. This was during the steroid situation, so they were looking at smaller guys. And once I allowed myself to watch it a few times, I just got completely sucked in.
Yeah, I mean, that really was, I mean, kind of 92 marked the point where the you know, main event style became more athletic. It was, you know, less kind of one-dimensional with Hogan, and it was Bret and Shawn Michaels, obviously, and Flair for a while, and and Savage, and all of them really, you know, brought kind of athleticism to it and kind of changed the, you know, kind of paved the way for the, you know, the Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart era.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And within just a few months, Bret was my guy and stayed my guy for the rest of his career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you pretty much stuck with it since? Or have you ever, like, had, like, periods of kind of going in and out? Or
I guess I definitely have. Now, ever since I started the website, I can't allow myself to do that, because to catch up would just, I'd rather shoot myself in the face.
Yeah.
But no, when I was, I'd say in high school, and that's kind of odd to say that, because when I was in high school, the WWF could really do no wrong. Mm-hmm. They had so many casual fans watching. This was during the Attitude Era, and I'd say pretty much anything after SummerSlam 98. I was really into SummerSlam 98. I love that hype, and I love that show. Mm-hmm. But shortly thereafter, they just started doing so much, and this was obviously when Russo was doing a lot of their major storylines, and into 99, I just, you know, off and on, I could care less. I actually remember, man, this goes to show how little I was really interested in 99. I didn't order Over the Edge 99. I completely forgot there was a pay-per-view that night. Mm-hmm. And after the pay-per-view, obviously, all the word got out that Owen had died, and I'm like, wait, yeah, there was a pay-per-view tonight. So that just kind of goes to show how the really uninterested I was. But I think they really turned things around about 6 months to a year later.
Yeah.
And really had a much better product at that point.
Yeah. I was kind of the same way. I think 98 and 97 were really like the really cool blending of like kind of some of the old school elements, some of the best stuff of the mid 90s. But they were obviously bringing in like the fresh talent of like, you know, Austin and Foley. They were kind of integrating, you know, both the early 90s and the late 90s guys. And they had kind of some of the new ideas, maybe, you know, from Russo or maybe from other sources, but it didn't get like over the top and crazy like it did in 99. Like 98 was kind of like the best of both worlds in some respects.
Yeah, I agree, and I just think in retrospect it's so funny that a period that a lot of people think is the peak of the industry, I look back and I'm like, I don't even know if I could watch those episodes now.
Yeah, I don't think, I think 99, and this is the case in WCW as well, although I think less so, because WCW always kind of had like that good wrestling base that you might have to like look hard to find it, but I think 1999 for the most part is not rewatchable, where, you know, I think some of the less popular years are much more rewatchable. It's kind of interesting how that happens.
Yeah, apparently the diehard wrestling fan base, what they consider good is not what the casual fans that are just watching it because it's the cool thing to watch consider good.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely an element to that, but I think even like, you know, like a casual fan today, I don't think they would. I mean, I think 1999 was just a product of the times, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't think you could really replicate. I mean, maybe there's aspects of it you could replicate, and you know, they obviously had great star power, but I don't think you could. I mean, you know, TNA does some elements of that product today, and it doesn't really work for them, so I don't really see how that.
It's very similar to watching TNA now, and you think back, wow, this is Nitro 99, Raw 99. Just there's so many things happening at once that you can't really digest any of it.
So it's weird how what worked at the time and what, you know, is, you know, everlasting, so to speak, can be two different things.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think? I mean, what are your kind of thoughts on WWE at this point? You know, interested, or, you know, just sort of hanging in there, or what are you thinking?
Well, I think, and I'll preface this by saying, I think it's a knee-jerk reaction by the fan base in general to compare what's going on now to what happened even a year ago. They put a lot of the older stuff on a pedestal, and they kind of forget how bad it was and just kind of glorify what was good about it. And then in comparison say, well, what's happening now? I mean, this is just kind of trashy. I like a lot of what's going on now. I think with any year and any era, there's a lot of bad and there's a lot of good.
Mm-hmm.
So it just kind of depends on what you want to focus on. I really enjoy what they're doing with R-Truth. I really enjoy the potential of what they're doing with Alex Riley.
Mm-hmm.
I like Christian's heel turn. And there's a lot going on that's got my attention. Now, there's also a lot going on that I'm not even paying attention to. Like, I can't tell you the last episode of NXT I watched.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there is, for a lot of the longtime fans and a lot of the diehard fans, they are more, they have more tendency to look back and go, oh, well, you know, when I started watching back in whatever year, everything was awesome. And I can guarantee you, from as much wrestling as I have watched it, you know, not only as a child, but just from what I've had to watch to maintain this website and expand the website, you can look at any territory, any year, and there's almost just as much bad as there is good. I think a lot of fans just choose to ignore that.
Mm-hmm. Now, going back, obviously, you know, you've gone back and, you know, and had results and watched matches from the 80s and 70s and 60s even. And is there like a particular, like, did you discover any particular era or territory or wrestlers from, you know, kind of before you were watching that really just like, wow, like, this is amazing? I'm sure there's a lot of answers you could give, but anything in particular?
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, I was not watching. I grew up a military kid, so I moved around a lot. And actually, my early childhood years, I was living off an Air Force base in Germany. So we didn't get much wrestling. We actually did get Superstars and Saturday Night's Main Event on the Armed Forces Network.
Okay.
So I actually did, years later after I became a fan, I was going through our old tapes, and I was like, holy crap, there's Saturday Night's Main Event on here from 1986. It was just random, too, because there was no one in. It was just me and my parents, and we didn't watch wrestling. So it was just weird that it was on there. But we got WWF overseas.
Okay.
And that's really what I grew up on, because no matter where I moved, I could always watch that. But to look back now at some of the Crockett stuff from, let's say, 85, 86, when you've got Magnum and Wahoo as a heel and Flair and Dusty, that stuff, it's really entertaining and interesting to compare that to what the WWF at the time, which was much more mainstream, but also much more cartoonish, much better production value. For instance, with Crockett actually used to tape TV here in the town that I live, which is Shelby, North Carolina. This is where the Rock and Roll Express won their first tag team titles. And I can't tell you how many times I've been to, it's not even a venue, it's the City Park Gym. I mean, it's like where you hold, you know, I don't know, banquets. It's just, it's not a wrestling venue, and I can't tell me how many times I've through my work covered stories there. And to think that this gym used to hold, you know, title matches and title changes for Jim Crockett Promotions at a time when the WWF was going around the country holding, you know, TV tapings in much larger arenas with much better lighting and much bigger crowds. Mm-hmm. It's just really interesting to compare and contrast what the different territories were doing at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, well, obviously Crockett, you know, really, I guess, grew in, like, you know, 87 and 88, or at least, you know, tried to make a big expansion, hit the big arenas, and that obviously, you know, they even though they were making money, their expenses got to be so bad that they, you know, that ended up costing them their business. So, yeah, I really think there's just so many interesting stories of the territorial days and just how, you know, each one was different and the different stars and the different philosophies and, you know, kind of what worked and what didn't work. I think just that wrestling is such a diverse, colorful, huge history that it's just really fascinating to, you know, explore what you can. But it's, you know, a lot of it's, you know, shrouded in mystery, I guess, so to speak. I mean, there's certainly been good books written about wrestling now, particularly in the past 10 years, but there's so much that, you know, we don't really know.
Oh, agreed. And it's really interesting, and what I really get a kick out of is when I'll be watching something or reading something and I come across something that I've never heard of before, or a match that at the time meant absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. But looking back now, it's really this, you know, historic moment. For instance, I was going through some old newsletters and watching some old WCW television, I guess about a year or two ago, and I came across the fact that Sting and Mean Mark competed for the NWA World Title. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at that now going, okay, that's Sting and The Undertaker for a world title. It meant absolutely nothing at the time because Mean Mark was a mid-card guy. Mm-hmm. And this was 6 months before The Undertaker was even a character.
Sure.
But looking back at something like that now, you go, holy crap. I mean, that's something that if there was any existing footage of, I'm sure WWE 24/7 or the online resource could make, you know, sell a lot of subscriptions by advertising that they had that match.
Yeah. Yeah, well, obviously that was, you know, everyone was whispering about that being the WrestleMania match this year. Or a lot of people really wanted that to be the WrestleMania match, so that's a big one. Yeah, one I found was Steve Austin and Randy Savage.
Oh, yeah. 95?
Yeah, you know, it's really like, it's like a 3-4 minute match, basically a squash. But, yeah, but, you know, it just, it's really interesting to see guys, you know, two guys from different eras, you know, who... You know, I mean, obviously, Savage being a star from the past and Austin being a star from the future, just kind of crossing paths like that, you know. And it's just funny because I grew up basically like a WWE fan and didn't really – like, yeah, I read some magazines, so I knew what was going – I mean, I knew the Horsemen and the Road Warriors and Sting and Luger and all that, but I didn't really get into WCW really until Hogan – went over, you know, then I watched it, you know, a little bit more often, and but then I, you know, later discovered, like, wow, WCW had this awesome history, like, even, like Paul Orndorff, for instance, like, I, in 1987, you know, like, Paul Orndorff, for all intents and purposes, for me, disappeared forever, and then, like, I find out years later, like, wow, he had a really good run in WCW, you know, against Cactus Jack, and, you know, pretty wonderful, and, you know, stuff like that. It's just, it's funny, you know, and now, you know, with the internet, everyone's so plugged into everything that's not real. I mean, you know, I'm sure there are probably still young kids who maybe don't know TNA or whatever. That could still happen, I guess, if you're young enough, but for the most part, you know, you can't lose people like you could in the 80s, so to speak.
Right, right. No, I completely agree. And with Twitter and Facebook and so many other avenues that weren't around back then, yeah, they've got the opportunity to get a much stronger foothold.
Mm-hmm. So is there any particular period since you've been watching that, like, you know, really stands out to you as, like, you know, some of your favorite years, or maybe like, you know, the year that like WWE was, or any of the companies were kind of clicking on all cylinders?
Oh, let me think. Thinking Jim Crocker Promotions, 1984 is very hit or miss, mm-hmm. because the company was just kind of experimenting and bringing in a lot of new guys from Florida, like, you know, Dusty and Manny Fernandez, and they really hit their stride in 85 and 86, mm-hmm. And by then you had the Midnight Express and a lot of other top talent that had already established themselves in other territories, and now Crockett had brought them in, and they were making big money for them. ECW, let me think, 96 is what I'm going through right now. I've got the season on DVD, mm-hmm. and I'm going through episode by episode, and I was watching an episode last weekend that was just really entertaining stuff, from, you know, I think this was the summer, so you've got Raven and Tommy Dreamer in their never-ending feud, Tommy working with Brian Lee, Tommy working with the Bruise Brothers, Stevie Richards is Raven's lackey, and I think in 96 is really when, and I kind of said this in my podcast last week, 95 is kind of like the first part of a movie where you're kind of introducing the major players in ECW. Mm-hmm. 96 is kind of a good sequel where you already know who everyone is, so you can start to really have some fun with them. Mm-hmm. There are some years in there that I just kind of don't want to watch. I'd say Crockett 84, just because it's almost a 50-50 or a 70-25 as to if it'll be any good. Mm-hmm. Let me think what else. Like I said earlier, a lot of the Attitude Era. I've got Nitros from 97, and primarily I think watching, they've got some good rewatching value, but there's some in there. They're just, you know, 10 3-minute matches with, you know, 3 20-minute NWO segments.
Yeah.
Much at times.
Yeah. Yeah, that got really bad. I mean, there were, even in 97, 98, there was some of that, but that, you know, 99 was when that obviously got really bad. And then I always found that, like the WCW Saturday Night shows, like, would always have, like, that would have, like, interesting, good wrestling. And I think it's kind of like Superstars today, but they had such, like, a weird, like, I mean, obviously they just had a huge roster of like 150 guys at one point, and they just had such like a weird mix of wrestlers that you would just find like interesting clashes of styles and, you know, and just such a, like a diverse range of things that you would have some really interesting, you know, matchups.
Yeah, I agree. And looking back, some of the later years of Saturday Night, I personally have not seen, but looking at the results, I'm kind of interested. I kind of want to see some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Between guys that at the time were something, or guys that, you know, 5 or 10 years later would really be something.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. And there's just, and it, you know, you just like, it's like, oh yeah, Marty Jannetty wrestled in WCW. It's like guys like, you know, have a few months run there, and it's like, oh yeah, it's just, you know, you weird names that you like, oh yeah, I completely forgot he was there because he was like on Nitro twice, but he was on Saturday Night, you know, like 10 times or whatever. It's just,
yeah, I think just about everyone in the business had a 6-month run during that point in WCW.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, I worked 2 Saturday Night matches myself.
Nice. Yeah, well, you know, it's yeah, WCW was a crazy place. I miss it, you know. It was of course sad when it went away.
Well, I miss more than probably anything good competition, because I think right now TNA does not provide that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, do you have TNA results on your site?
There's demand for it, mm-hmm. But as of right now, I just do not have the time, mm-hmm. or the extra effort to put into that, because that's a huge undertaking in and of itself to do that right. And right now, I'm focusing on WWE and ECW and WCW, and there's really so much just between those three that is not up there yet. Mm-hmm. There's so many, so much in my own personal collection that I need to watch and get those results up. Now, down the line, you know, like I said earlier, next year is the 10-year anniversary of the website, and I am very interested in expanding. But at this point, I think I've taken on just about everything that I can.
Yeah, well, you have a lot, obviously, so that's completely understandable.
Oh, by the way, while I'm thinking of it, I said earlier that I can't remember the last episode of NXT that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's anyone out there that has and would like to watch that on a regular basis and send me the results, I would be more than thankful.
There you go. Well, yeah, WWE is all those internet shows now. It's, you know, it's yeah, Superstars, obviously, the internet show now. It's kind of that makes it even tougher, and you know, to, you know, be as exhaustive as you want to be, I'm sure.
Right, right. And I've got a busy work schedule as it is. I have a salaried position at a newspaper, which is pretty much a 24/7 gig. And then, you know, sometimes during the weekends, I just watch nothing but wrestling simply to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be pretty demanding schedule at times.
Yeah, I bet, definitely. And you, of course, you have the What the World is Watching blog as well.
Yes. And that, I try to have some fun with that. I try to update that every day, taking a look back at a particular show or event that happened on that date in history. Yesterday I had up yesterday would have been the 17th, I had a blog taking a look at Sid Justice's first WWF television debut back in 1991. It was during a TV taping that happened on that date, and kind of taking a look and explaining that, you know, just a month earlier at Super Brawl in WCW, he got trashed by Elegante in a stretcher match in basically 2 minutes. And then now he walks in the WWF TV taping. And not only is he in the main event, working the referee spot for the big main event of SummerSlam, but he's also, you know, who else is in that match? Sergeant Slaughter, Ultimate Warrior, Hulk Hogan. So I'd say that's a pretty good promotion for Sid.
Yeah. It's funny how many chances that he really got to you know, be on top based on, I mean, obviously he had an incredible look and intensity and size, but man, he, in the ring, not so much.
Oh yeah, I agree. But looking back at that run in 92, in 91, 92, I think he really had a good thing going. I mean, your main eventing in WrestleMania is Hulk Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
Now I don't really agree with the way that happened, because I think Sid was massively over as a babyface.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they just kind of haphazardly turned him heel on Hogan, and I don't think all the fans bought it, and I think Sid still had plenty of fans of his own.
Yeah.
And not a month after WrestleMania, he's out of the company because he doesn't want to lose to Warrior.
Right. So
I think he kind of shot himself in the foot on that one. I think shooting himself in the foot would become a trend.
Yes. He there's a character right there, certainly, Sid. I mean, it's funny how, like, he would just randomly, like, pop up, like, okay, like, a year later, he's in WCW for a while, and then, of course, the Arn Anderson, you know, stabbing incident, and then,
right,
you know, then he's Shawn Michaels' buddy a couple years later. It's just, you know, he would always, it's because there was a gap for me, because I was really into it, like, from 86 to 90, 91, and kind of slowly watched less and less, and pretty much stopped watching, like, 93, 94, 95, and then kind of picked it up again a little bit 96. So, like, when I would go back and watch, I'd go rent VHS tapes from Blockbuster or whatever to kind of catch up on things, and then you see this guy, like, pop up, you know, certain places, it's like whoa, you know, what's the story there? It's funny when, you know, guys have just short runs like that, and I'm sure you come across that, you know, a whole bunch when you're going through stuff.
Oh yeah, it's really interesting. In fact, when I remember when I was a kid, and like I said, I would move around a lot, and really the only thing I could ever count on to watch was WWF. But I remember I was on vacation once visiting some family in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just flipping through the channels, and oh my God, USWA is on. I have never seen USWA. All I know is Jerry Lawler's on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And so I start watching, and they're talking about Sid Vicious came out of nowhere at the Mid-South Coliseum and beat up Jerry Lawler. And holy crap, Sid Vicious, I haven't seen him since he got into a fight with Arn Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty interesting to get that one chance to see one of the indies during the 90s. And so I kind of know what Sid was up to between the stabbing incident and then becoming Sean's bodyguard.
Yeah. So when did you first, like, discover wrestling on the internet?
Probably as soon as I got the internet, and this was early 98.
Okay.
So it would have been maybe a month or two after the Montreal Screwjob.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, like I said earlier, Brett was my guy, so
yeah.
I got on that thing and tried to read up as much as I could, and I think the Montreal Screwjob just had great timing, because that was really at a point where so many people were getting online for the first time,
mm-hmm.
and so that just kind of served as a huge resource, or it was either a huge resource or a huge detriment to the wrestling, to wrestling fans in the wrestling industry, because once people got online, I mean, there was no curtain anymore. I mean, you could find out as much as you wanted about, you know, what wrestling is, you know, all the stories that you had never heard of before from behind the curtain. And I think that really opened a lot of people's eyes. But for me, I think I started at that point to appreciate the industry for more than just what I saw on television. You know, there's so much more going on that you have no idea about that happens off camera.
Yeah,
and I thought that was pretty interesting in its own right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just how the egos and the politics influence so much, and you know, the idea of guys not wanting to, you know, lose to other guys, or you know, a whole bunch of things. Yeah, that I was basically pretty close to that time frame. I was online for a few years before I even like thought about, oh yeah, like I'm gonna try to find like websites about wrestling. But it was probably, it would have been like summer of 97 when I first, you know, really started like finding message boards or finding like, you know, websites that like kind of explain what was going on in wrestling. And you know, like some of the rec sport pro wrestling guys that, you know,
oh yeah,
I didn't really go to that Usenet group, but then I discovered what it was later and then found information that they had put out, you know, that kind of thing, and discovered that community and so forth. So, but I think it was really the Montreal Screwjob was the first thing, like, because I was watching on TV and I didn't really understand what had happened and I didn't really, you know, get the backstory, and that was like the first time where I like really like, okay, I need to research and understand what this is. And that was really, I think, like the big tipping point for me to become like, you know, a knowledgeable wrestling fan who had a depth of knowledge and understanding, and who really, you know, tried to do as much research as possible. That's really one of the things that, you know, cemented me as a fan, because I really started watching full time. It was, I think, the night after SummerSlam, 97, night that Luger won the title from Hulk Hogan.
That was a good day. That was my 16th birthday.
Oh, nice.
So I always look back at that and go, that was an awesome match and just an awesome moment.
Oh yeah, that was, yeah. And you know, people don't remember that one as well as they remember the Goldberg win over Hogan, and maybe rightfully so. But that Luger win was a big, I mean, that was a huge deal.
Yeah, it was. And I was actually watching the new Best of Nitro set that came out just about a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
And to look back at that now and the post-match celebration, I think really that, on camera at least, that was bigger than Sting and Hogan at Starrcade.
Yeah. Boy, yeah. I did a podcast on that match a few months ago. We were talking a lot about that celebration and just how, you know, how funny it was, and watching Hogan, you know, having the heel locker room, like watching Savage and Hogan, you know, freak out over him losing the belt, and just mm-hmm. all the personalities. I mean, that was like a really well done, like it felt like very chaotic, but it felt like natural and real, and it was like over the top, but in a good way, you know.
It was a nice payoff for the fans that had been following that angle for basically a year at that point.
Yeah.
And I think in retrospect, it was kind of a shame, because you knew that they had to take the belt off Luger so they could eventually put it on Sting.
Yeah.
But for what that payoff was, it was kind of disappointing in the long run.
Yeah. I mean, it was really flat when, you know, Luger or lost it back, I think, 5 days later. And at Road Wild, yeah, that was not a good. It was weird how they built the rest of that to the Sting match, because the timing was a little odd, because like, oh, Luger's winning the belt now, even though, you know, in 4 months, you know, we're doing Sting and Hogan, and then Hogan lost again to Piper at Halloween Havoc 97, which always baffled me too. And then, of course, I guess the most baffling thing was the not really losing the Sting and the fast count, and that wasn't fast and all of that stuff, you
know? The slow count,
right? Yeah. Exactly. The not fast, not slow, just regular count that baffled everybody. But yeah, that was an interesting period for sure. To actually kind of figure out what wrestling is really all about, and you know, to kind of get knowledge of it for the first time. And I think there's. The internet's sort of been a double-edged sword for wrestling, because obviously it's taken the mystique out of it, so to speak. You know, you don't really have like those innocent days like when you were a kid, when maybe you knew better than that it was real, but you still kind of believed in it.
Right.
And now it's kind of, you know, it's just harder to do that once you know so much about it. But at the same time, you know, it fosters an appreciation for the art form.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think I put myself in that category. You know, I can still go to. I remember my first show I ever went to. I was 11 years old, and it was larger than life. And I don't think there'll be an experience going to a show that will ever compare to that. But at the same time, going and seeing WrestleMania 20 live or WrestleMania 24 or going to Atlanta this past April and seeing WrestleMania, that's on a whole new different level. I don't think I could have really appreciated that as much if I was so young and really didn't know that much about the industry. I think if I was a 12-year-old fan that just watched wrestling for what I saw on television, just appreciated for what I saw on television, then I don't think I could go to WrestleMania and appreciate it for really what it is.
Cool.
And to see Miz, you know, beat Cena and go, holy crap, that was awesome. That wouldn't happen if I was 12.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You would be sad that, you would be sad that Cena did not win in the big match. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's weird how, I don't know. It's just, I mean, I know why wrestling is so different now than it was, you know, 15, 20, 25 years ago. But if you just look, I mean, if you watch a show now and you watch a show from back then, it's just it's like almost a completely different thing in a lot of respects.
It is. I think what they have right now is very slick and very polished and very mainstream, because they're trying to reach a PG audience. They're trying to reach a family audience. They're trying to reach an audience that already knows it's fake.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to do some things along the way to pick up interest where otherwise there wouldn't be interest. Whereas back then, they kind of, like, I remember during the Nitro and Raw peak era, they would kind of allude here and there and hint here and there that things were predetermined and that maybe somebody did something that they weren't supposed to, or that there wasn't scripted to happen, but they didn't come right out and as they would now and say, this is all entertainment.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Graham. Well, why don't you let everyone know, plug anything you would like to plug and let them know where he can find you and so forth.
Okay. Well, the website is thehistoryofwwe.com. Try to update that every single day. I try. I don't always do that. But you can find, like I said, WWE results back to 63, WCW the entire run, ECW the entire run. The blog is updated every day. There is a message board. There are podcasts, which go up several times a week. We're on Twitter, The History of WWE on Twitter. We're on Facebook, so like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and glad to have you as a fan, and if you can help out in any way, I'd more than appreciate it.
All right. Well, thanks, Graham, for being on the show. Definitely appreciate it. And thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll be back again soon.
Let's be honest. Most wrestling websites suck. BS rumors, schoolyard gossip, plagiarism. It's no wonder why no one believes anything they read on the internet. Well, if you can't get something done right, you might as well do it yourself. Presenting the Fair to Flare Quarterly from the writers of FairToFlare.com and over a dozen other wrestling websites. We're not copy and pasting what we read in some newsletter. This is 100% original content from the best wrestling bloggers on the internet. In-depth analysis of the art of pro wrestling, debate, artwork, and humor. The Fair to Flare Quarterly will raise the bar of what wrestling journalism can and should be. Professionally edited and produced, and every contributor will be paid for their work. Order your copy of the Fair to Flare Quarterly today at FairToFlare.com. The better wrestling media has arrived.